On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we are joined by our friend Adam Hill from the Las Vegas Review Journal. We discuss why the media hates the Raiders' offensive line moves, getting to Kenyon Drake's role as well, why the Raiders are a destination for skill players, and the best and worst free agency moves so far. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation, and of course, we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into the nightmares.
There he is!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yes, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto here.
What up?
Remember last week, it was a roller coaster of emotion in free agency. Oh, what are we doing? Oh, my God, we lost him. Oh, great, I love this signing. And now we're just filling up our bellies full of defensive linemen. But kind of cooled down a little bit between last show and this one. Like, you had the opening of free agency last week. That was nuts. Now it's just like a ton of defensive linemen, a running back. You're like, wow, I like him, but that's a lot of money. And some more contracts keep getting slashed.
Yeah, man. I mean, honestly, I think if we could pull up the audio from the free agent when I was talking about building cap space, what we can do to build cap space, I think almost every single damn person that I said we should cut is gone.
Yep.
So, I mean, not only am I a genius, but I think it was pretty obvious. The players it was pretty obvious.
It's like getting every single question right of a first grader's math test. You know, it's like, yeah, you got it all right.
Some of those are kind of tricky.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
You should have needed to.
Here's the issue, or here's the thing that has some cause for optimism here.
Okay.
We're not saying, why are we still have this guy? Why are we still paying this guy? They're here. They're not performing for one reason or another. They're not performing to their contract and they're gone. That's what you have to do, especially when you're trying to build here. You keep the players who are performing. You pay players who come in who have proven to perform. You don't overpay, and we're not doing that, which is good. So we're running the franchise like a sensible franchise, which is very non-Raider-esque, especially recently. I'm feeling good.
So here are the base salaries of a top eight highest paid players as of a month and a half ago. Right. So about 6 weeks ago, these were the highest paid players on the team. Derek Carr, obviously number one, 19 million.
Okay. Played.
Trent Brown, 13 million.
Didn't play.
Traded for a third rounder.
Okay.
Terrell Williams, 11 and a half million.
Didn't play.
Didn't play. Cut. I'm going to skip number four. We'll come back to number four.
Okay.
Number five, Gabe Jackson. Traded.
Okay. Average, decent lineman wasn't worth the money.
Wasn't worth the money. Traded. Number six, LaMarcus Joyner. Cut.
Not worth the money.
Number seven, Rodney Hudson. Mm. Ouch. Ugh, this sucks. I'm so sad. But he was due $9.5 million.
Yeah.
Traded.
I think you and I had a little bit of a spat this last week when I pulled back a little bit and I looked at it from a different perspective without my Raider glasses on.
Okay.
And not to say that that's what you did. I'm saying that's what I did. And I'm okay with it now. I'm okay with it. It sucks. I would rather keep them. If we could find the money somewhere, make it work, something like that, it'd be great. But if he's not in the top 10, do you know how they calculate the win rate for offensive linemen?
No.
So the win rate is calculated.
A lot of calculators.
So basically, it's really not that difficult. It's winning your block for 2.5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to do with giving up sacks, because what if you have a more mobile quarterback or a quarterback that gets the ball off quickly? If you get beat in less than 2.5 seconds and the quarterback still gets the ball out, that's nothing to do with you. That's the quarterback getting the ball out, right?
Yeah.
You still lost that block. So that's how they calculate that. And there's a couple of things, but that's the main thing, is winning your block for 2.5 seconds. Yes, you do it. That's a win percentage. No, you don't do it, then that's a loss. And Rodney Hudson was not in the top 10 passing or rushing win block, win rate for blocking. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these stats that you're seeing, like, oh, he only allowed one sack or this and that or whatever. Yeah, those are great, but those are comparing him to other centers in the league, right? So what if that's just commonplace for centers not to give up a lot of sacks?
Look, they give up less, you know, they're under less pressure than like a tackle.
Or even a guard, like, sometimes.
But he was like over the top good. He gave up one sack in like 2.5 seasons.
He was good.
He missed in durability. And again, you look at Wainwright, like holding a block for 2.5 seconds. There's so much great film of Rodney, like, you know, pre-snap, point to who gets blocked, given like a shoulder to a nose tackle, going back, guarding the other tackle, you know, picking up, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, he has, yeah, a, I mean, he's not always just a great, like, player.
One dude head on.
He's a great player. Lose.
Yeah. And he's all over the place, and he's like doing other people's jobs for him as well. So like, again, there's tons of metrics in football, but just like durability, not giving up sacks, leader of that line. It sucks. Like, he was the best player on the team.
I agree. He was the best player on the team. I agree. It sucks. I'm just looking at those statistics because that I looked at it from this perspective. These are the only statistics that we can use that actually compare him to other centers, right? And he wasn't in the top 10 for whatever reason. Who knows? He wasn't there. So that tells me that him being, I think, the third highest paid center in the league and not in the top 10 run blocking or pass blocking as far as win rate goes, there's room for improvement there. There's that sliding scale where we can get more production for, or not more production, but similar production for a lot less money.
Yeah.
And it's possible to do. I see it from that perspective. The Gabe Jackson thing is, like you said, Gabe Jackson was just Rodney Hudson light last week, right? It's the same thing. Is he a bad player? No. Is he a durable player? For the most part, yes. He's been a pretty durable player for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, guard is one of the rougher positions now because a lot of these defensive tackles are just beasts. But, you know, again, you see his production versus how much he's getting paid, and it's like, it just wasn't there. It wasn't there. And I'm not saying that Gabe Jackson wasn't good, and I'm not saying Rodney Hudson wasn't great. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that we can get the production that we can get, you know, from, you know, Andre James or, you know, Nick Martin at a lot less price.
I mean, look at it this way. Our projected starting interior line, guard, center, guard, combined, their salary is less than Gabe Jackson's. Combined.
Perfect.
Right?
And I guarantee you, Carr is not going to be running for his life next year, if that's the line. Now, if they get hurt and they plug a bunch of guys and you get a lot of Sam Youngs.
That's where we're kind of hurt, is depth.
Like, well, that's what the draft's for. I'm pounding the table for Elijah Vera Tucker out of SC. This kid is a stud. He played guard. He played tackle. He played them both well. And if he's available, he's a right tackle on your team for 10 years. And so, we need a position to need. If he's there, take him.
So our line obviously got a giant makeover. Like you mentioned, we got rid of three starters. Trent Brown traded, Rodney Hudson traded, Gabe Jackson traded. And so now we're down to this is what I think our line will be next season. Miller, left tackle.
Got it.
Richie Incognito, left guard.
Oof.
Andre James, center. Good right guard. And I think we use our first round pick on a tackle, whether it's your boy from SC or not.
Oh, man, he's so good, though.
That line is about less than half of what our line cost last season. And I'd say, again, if they stay healthy, they're probably about 80%, 75 to 80% as good as last season's line at half the price. I mean, that's a win, right? As long as that money that's being saved is used wisely, that's just good economic football roster management.
It's just it's the way football's been run forever. Let's pay the best guy on the team, and then what do you do after you pay the best guy on the team? Is you find a guy to replace him. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is. NFL, not for long. We've heard it before, yeah. And I think the most appreciable drop off we're going to see potentially is at center. I don't see a lot of drop off anywhere else on the team. Yep. Good, it's going to be fine at guard. I think it's going to be.
He started 14 games last season.
He's going to be just as good as if Incognito. That's the big if, right?
He's Denzel great. He's not Denzel good.
Yeah. If the queen had a dick, she'd be the king, right? It's a big if. If Incognito can stay healthy, we're going to have our line's going to be not a problem, not an issue.
The Raiders saved $25 million against the cap and $33 million just by trading Brown, Hudson, and Jackson.
We could have used that to sign Anthony Harris.
Could use that for a lot of things. They could use that to drop beer prices at Allegiant Stadium. I have a lot of ideas for that money. No. So again, like, depth is my only concern, right? Again, the giant IF. If these guys stay healthy, we should be all right. But it's how everyone else is looking at this that has me raising my eyebrows. So we're both in agreement that, like, as much as it hurts to lose Hudson, as much as there's like question marks around putting, you know, a starting center in there to replace Rodney, who only played one game, talking about Andre James. We both like the economics of the move. And as long as that money is used wisely, we should be in a good place. But so much of the football media are looking at this like the Raiders are just imploding. Like John Gruden and Mike Mayock are just punting on this next season, and they're getting ready for the season after. Colin Cowherd said that. John Middlecoff said that. And of course, those are like mainstream media guys. Maybe don't have their pulse on the Raiders the same way you and I do. But even the guys at The Athletic, like Vic Tafer and Tashaun Reed, they're like, yeah, you know, I don't know what they're doing. It looks like they're just giving up next season. I don't get that. I don't understand. Our line went from the most expensive line in football that played above average, which a bunch of aging players who needed a ton of money, and now you're replacing them with guys pretty close as good that are way cheaper.
Just as good, younger, can still develop. The problem is it's easy to hate the Raiders because of what you remember of the Raiders. Mm-hmm. Bad contracts, letting guys go that flourish somewhere else, bad draft picks, you know, all that, all those things. It's easy to hate. And when something is, because the thing is you're not only saying stuff because it's easy to say, but it's easy to digest for people who maybe don't follow the Raiders as closely as you and I do, right? So when you, and those optics aren't just for the media, those optics are for the listener as well. Mm-hmm. So when they say, oh yeah, the Raiders are imploding, what are they doing? If that person wants to take it, that listener who doesn't follow the Raiders as closely wants to take a look at what's actually going on, what they see first is all these starters making all this money. Now they have all these young guys unproven in their eyes, making a lot less money. Oh yeah, looks like they are punting. But if you take a look at what they're actually doing, they're bringing back the people that actually performed. Colton Miller performed, not making a lot of money. They brought Incognito back.
He's going to cost us next season when that fifth year.
Oh yeah, and you know what? Good.
He's going to cost.
Good. Yeah. He's going to cost, and we pay him.
Yep.
Incognito, from all reports, he's doing fine. He's doing well. He said he'll be fine for training camp.
Surgery went well. Rehab went great.
He's looking good. He's actually down some weight too, from what I understand. So great. He's going to be back. That's going to be a vicious left side, man. Those guys are two bad dudes. Again, if Tom Cable, who is he is an excellent offensive line coach. Look what happened to Seattle when he left Seattle. Their offensive line went to shit. And
he's the one coach on this squad I fully trust.
He knows what the hell he's doing. He's done it at multiple places. Was he the best head coach? Probably not. But stick him with the offensive line, and he's going to put out a good line.
I think it comes down to this, like, and again, this is more like mainstream football writers and analysts and commentators, but they just look at them. They just look at the price. Like, remember how pissed I was that Rodney Hudson didn't make All-Pro this season? You know why? Because the Colts player was making more money. And who was the other guy that went from the AFC, the other center? I don't remember. But I remember they both had like crazy contracts.
Crazy contracts, yeah.
They're just like, oh yeah, they must be the two best guys because they're getting paid the most money. Yep. And so when you're on the outside looking in, you're like, oh, they're getting rid of all these high-priced players. That means they don't care. No, like Richie Incognito was the best guard on the team when he was healthy, right? Denzel Good, like he started 14 games because no one was around, right? Like Trent Brown, started half the games that he should have in two seasons. You know, only started half the games in the two seasons he was playing. So it's like,
yeah,
outside looking in, it's just lazy analytics. But what I don't get are the beat writers that think that they're giving up. Vic Tafer, Tashawn Rito, The Athletic, I brought them up before. They're like, yeah, I don't know what they're doing. Oh, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, what are you seeing that I'm not? Like, what are you missing
it's
that
just
I'm
jumping on? My head? They're just jumping on it. They're just jumping on it, man. Yeah. They're just jumping on it because, honestly, it's an uphill battle at this point. It's better off just to jump on the narrative that's out there. If you want to swim against the stream, it's just you got to pick your battles sometimes. And it's not a and standing up for the Raiders until they start winning games late in the year, it's not a battle you want to pick, unfortunately.
Last bit of news before we get to Adam Hill, our guest. We're $6.5 million richer, us Raiders, Marcus Mariota. The game of chicken, the little Mexican standoff going on between the Raiders and Mariota is now done. Mariota had a new contract, $3.5 million. $3.5 million for a 1 year contract for next season. There's some incentives in there, a no trade clause in there. Seems like the Raiders played him like a fiddle. They wanted, like, Mariota wanted to get, you know, his giant $10 million contract next year. And the Raiders said, look, we'll trade you. We'll cut you. They wouldn't trade him for a while. So they let all the other teams get their quarterbacks, right? Like, I think the Bears would have much rather had Marcus Mariota than Andy Dalton, right? Like, there were a lot of places he could have went, but the Raiders waited till they were all done and said, okay, now the well is dry. No one's looking for a quarterback. Here's our deal. Take it or leave it. And they took it. That doesn't mean that we won't trade him later in the season. Like, if a starting quarterback for a playoff team gets,
well, he's a very tradable contract now.
It's a tradable contract, but he has the no trade clause. So he would be able to decide where he goes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it played out the way it had to. If you're Mariota, you're not going to voluntarily take less money. You're going to wait it out to get traded somewhere. Hopefully that inflated contract gets picked up. And if you get cut, then you just, you know, you're where you are now anyway, right?
Yep.
Once everything dried up, everyone seemingly has their quarterbacks. Okay, now, okay, nothing worked out. No bites. Okay, fine. Then I'll restructure instead of taking nothing because no starting jobs are out there. I might as well stay here where I know the system and I know I can perform well if I get the call. And I want to make a comeback name for myself right now. But honestly, I think both sides played it the way they had to, and they both played it right. If you're Mariota, wait it out. Don't take less money until you have to. And this is the point where he had to, so he did.
I love how you brought up Mariota saying, "Look, let me just stay here. I know the system will play well." The Raiders, it just kind of hit me today. It's just like the Raiders are like a great spot for offensive players who want to kind of change their image. Like the Raiders player, like the offensive
defense,
players,
man, it's a good offense.
Yeah. The defense is terrible. And it's like a black hole, pun intended, for like defensive players coming to the Raiders and not play great for the most part. But like, you look at like Nelson Aguilar, played one season. Now he's got a 2 year, $26 million deal. Roddy and Jackson got new landing spots. Mariota looked good.
That is
Incognito was almost a Pro Bowl level guy. Darren Waller came out of nowhere. And even Devontae Booker got $6 million 2 years, being the backup running back for the Raiders. Like, if you want – and then John Brown now coming to the Raiders, he's like, hey, my contract year was my worst year. Let me go have Derek Carr throw some dimes at me and John Gruden's offense for a while. 1 year deal. I'll make some more money the following season. Like, if you're an offensive player that wants to rehab their image and get a big contract, your launching pad is the Raiders.
It's a great spot to be in, and Aguilar had last year an accurate Derek Carr and a defense that was focused on not only Waller ahead of him, but Ruggs ahead of him because you have to, and Josh Jacobs because you have to. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of like the forgotten guy, or it's like you only have so many people on the team. You can't double everybody. And you can't spy everybody, so he's going to get open, which he did. And to his credit, he performed. If John Brown can perform to his level, he doesn't have to do anything superhuman. He just has to perform to his level. He's going to be back up towards the 85 balls. He'll score a lot of touchdowns. He'll move a lot of chains. He doesn't have to do anything super crazy. He's a more than capable veteran a wide receiver who has the speed, who has the hands, who has the ability to run routes. So he's going to do great.
On paper, he's better than Nelson Aguilar in almost
everything he does.
Metric, like 40 times better. His drop rate's lower.
The drop his rate's lower. Running, like, he's faster.
Every metric, he's better than Nelson Aguilar.
Yeah. And we were talking about this earlier. Bryan Edwards, that kid, I'm telling you, this kid's going to break out. He's going to break out this year. I don't know what the fuck happened last year. He was an offensive lineman for the first five weeks before he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And he was blocking every single play, but he was mashing everyone he was going up against. He was blocking. He was a glorified lineman. And they finally started throwing the ball late in the year. And I think that's why everyone was so excited when he scored that touchdown late last year.
Yeah.
Because it's like, all right, there it is. Now we can see it. All his work is starting to come out. So yeah. I have a feeling he's going to be.
It's a glimmer of what we hope his future is going to be. Where our future is Las Vegas Review Journal's Adam Hill. First time we're getting a reoccurring guest ever on the Autumn Windbags. He's next. Welcome back. Our very first doubleheader, the first reoccurring guest in Autumn Windbags history for the Las Vegas Review Journal, Adam Hill joining us. Welcome back, buddy.
Wow, quite an honor. I didn't even know. I'm glad you sprung it on me right now. That's
we wanted to spring it on you when you were on camera so we can watch you burst into tears and get to that acceptance speech for how big this is in your life.
I wasn't expecting this. I didn't have any speech ready. I just want to thank everyone in the whole world, I guess. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Good time.
Either he has the thickest skin out of all of our guests, or he just has nothing to do. One of the two.
it's still technically quarantine. I mean, even though we're allowed out a little bit, like, still stuck in the house. So believe me, when the world's back to normal, I don't even know who you guys are.
Jesus. I don't blame you.
Yeah. Getting guests would be a lot tougher once people are afraid. But while we got you, free agency is in full swing. The first week, we were just a ball of emotions. Like, oh, great, we got Yannick. Oh, God, we lost Rodney. Oh, sweet, we signed these other dudes. What? We're paying a backup running back. How much? Like, what's free agency for the Raiders been like for you the last week and a half?
I mean, the same kind of emotions in terms of covering it and just kind of, you know, being on the phone and hearing from agents and hearing from different guys. And it's a really weird process. I'll also point out, like, not that, you know, your listeners and viewers care, but it happened to coincide with UNLV and doing a basketball coaching search at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so it's really weird, like, free agency and covering a basketball coaching search is kind of the same thing, where it's like all these people are trying to get their names out there, trying to get their words out there. So agents will call you and be like, hey, my guy, he's real close to a deal. And it's just to kind of get a deal somewhere else. Like, they just want the publicity a little bit to go somewhere else. And so, like, with the basketball search, it's you have basketball coaches, like, literal, like, people you would know, even if you don't follow the sport, calling you on the phone and saying, hey, I really want this job, put my name out there. And you're like, why are you calling me? Like, who cares what I have to say? But it's the same thing. Like, what a free agent, like, a guy who's available, his agent calls you, like, who cares if I tweet that there's interest from this team? But somehow it gets the you know, the ball rolling for guys.
You know why, Adam? Because every other journalist but guys like you are like, oh yeah, sure, scoop, here it is, here's a story, done deal. True.
But even like me, I'll put some stuff out there, and the same with the other reporters. Like, they're doing their job by putting it out there,
sure,
because it could be true. And you're also, listen, by doing that, maybe you get something in the future. I don't even mean it like that. I just mean it from a standpoint of, like, just the constant phone ringing, the constant text. It's a whirlwind of craziness. And then in the end, you always know that, you know, the same three people are going to break every actual signing, because it's kind of a deal between the league and the broadcast partners that their reporters are going to get everything first. And that's fine. But it's just a constant whirlwind. And then you're like, you're trying to play catch up. You're trying to stay ahead of the game. You're trying to do all this. It's nuts. So, I mean, for you guys following it and for the fans that are following it, I'm sure it's a crazy whirlwind for a couple of days, but I mean, it's the same for us. It's nuts. Like, you just get ready for, you know, 3-4 days of just complete chaos, and then kind of a waiting game after that. Like, you know, you get into this routine now where it's like, okay, maybe there's something happening today, maybe there's not. But it's a long-term process that all happens real quickly and then slows down so much.
Well, along those same lines, then, like the behind the scenes and everyone, like it's all a game of misinformation, right? Like everyone's trying to get something out there to get more because everything's a negotiation.
Sure.
Why did things go so weirdly with Rodney Hudson and Gabe Jackson? Like it was leaked that they were going to be cut. I was like, why are you can trade these guys? Like, why are they getting? And then they did eventually get traded. And then like there was reports of like, oh, they weren't happy here or they were happy here. Like, this just sounds like an agent leaked something that they were going to be cut to like try to get them out there faster. Like, what happened with all of that? Like, how is it that they were going to be cut, but they end up getting traded when it was so obvious they were not going to get cut?
I mean, I don't know that it was that obvious, because I think that, you know, there's a possibility people were going to wait and let them be cut and then try to sign them as free agents. It was just a matter of would a team step up and offer anything. And I think part of the issue with them is that it seems like what the Raiders did is told their agents, like, hey, listen, we're trying to trade them, and if we can't, we're probably going to cut them for salary cap purposes. And that message kind of turned into they're moving on from them, they're going to cut them. And then an agent told a reporter, hey, they're going to cut this guy. And then they did, which didn't, I mean, it took a couple of days, but eventually the trades got done. But I think the intention was they would have been released if they couldn't find a trading partner. And the messaging just kind of got lost a little bit. But you're right, it was crazy. But I also think, like, you know, I saw people blaming some of the reporters that put that out of, like, how could you say this? You were wrong about this. Like, no, that's an agent telling you wrong information. Like, I will promise you right now that there's no journalist out there, whether sports journalist, political journalist, anything. The whole, like, fake news thing, there's never, ever in history been fake news. Okay, like one or two instances where some reporter made something up. Like 99.999% of stories are real stories from a real source that maybe were lost in translation somewhere along the way. Yeah. So like none of these reporters are just putting out Rodney Hudson's getting cut if that didn't come from somewhere. Like, it's not just a reporter like, hey, this is going to happen. Like that's foolish. But yeah, it was one of those things that was just kind of lost in translation. And, you know, eventually what actually happened was a trade and they can move on from the original reporting. But yeah, I think what it was is the players and the agents were told, hey, this is the end of the line for you here. If we can't find a trade partner, you're going to get cut. And I think they had worked on a trade partner for a couple weeks and hadn't found anybody. So it looked like maybe it wouldn't happen. Maybe they would have to be released. But in the end, you know, they're talented players that ended up getting a little bit of compensation. I think decent compensation. I mean, it's not – you don't get the value of what the player actually is. Like, you're not going to find a starting center and a starting guard right now necessarily for those draft picks. But you are going to get something out of them, which it would have been a cap casualty otherwise.
Yeah, so after all this, I mean, I agree with you. I said a third for a center, no matter how good they are, that's pretty good. Yeah. And for an average, a little slightly above average guard, a fifth, it's about right. I mean, I'm not mad at it.
Yeah.
So after the roller coaster and the first wave of free agency and cuts, how worried are you about the offensive line?
Well, I don't have to worry about it. I just have to come in right about it.
He's up every single night, just chewing his nails, drinking from a bottle directly.
If I were Derek Carr or a Raiders fan, I'd be pretty concerned. I mean, certainly, it's clear that they've reallocated resources, right? They've said, hey, we were spending a lot of money on the offensive line for a group that's getting older, and was playing well when they were a full unit. Obviously, last year there was a ton of injuries and they weren't there all the time. But, like, investing in an offensive line that was really good got them where exactly? It got them a pretty good offense. You know, last year, I would say a good to very good offense last year. But did it translate to wins? Not necessarily. So I think what the plan was inside the building of, hey, listen, yes, we can continue to spend a lot of money on the offensive line, watch these guys get older and older, probably have another good year, maybe even 2 years out of them, but that hasn't translated into wins. So they have to find a way to allocate their resources better, and the plan was we will do that through taking some of that money, trying to piece together a younger offensive line that's a lot cheaper, and trying to spend that money on other positions, which turned out to be, as you said, a backup running back and some defensive linemen. I don't know if that's a better way.
A group of defensive linemen. Jesus.
Like 37 defensive tackles now. Like, make it up in volume.
you know, maybe some of them can turn around and play offense. I don't know. Like maybe that's part of the plan.
Iron Man football. Iron Man football.
But yeah, I mean, they clearly made a decision that investing a lot of money in the offensive line was not translating to wins. And you know, you can you know disagree with that. And I would say, hey, listen, it helped make the offense really good. And eventually, if you make the defense better, that will translate to wins. But you couldn't make the defense a whole lot better by continuing to spend that much money on the offensive line. So, yeah, I think you're concerned if you're the Raiders about the offensive line right now and how they're going to come together, how they're going to gel. But at the same time, like, what was it getting you to have a, you know, 2 years ago, you had one of the best offensive lines in football, and it translated to what exactly? Like, I mean, I believe you have to build through the lines for sure, but you have to allocate the resources a little bit differently.
Evenly, yeah. So one of the things that really stuck out to me, your first time on our show, was – how respected Rodney Hudson was. When he spoke, everyone listened. What happened? There were reports that he wasn't happy. What happened in there?
Well, let's see. I don't know, because again, and here's the problem, and I don't, you know,
you weren't in the facility.
I don't want to cop out on this. Yeah, we weren't in the facility all year. So when I was there, like last year in Alameda, when I was there every single day and I was in the locker room after the game every single week, you could just tell, like, guys were around him. Guys wanted to hear what he had to say. If he didn't speak a whole lot, and I think that was kind of the book on him. Like, it's not like he's going to give a speech every day, but when he did, like, that was the attention. And I don't think that changed necessarily. I just think, first of all, I think there was a lot of issues last year. I think a lot of it had to do with not being necessarily around each other. I mean, they were around each other, but they had to be separated. They had to have all their workspaces different. They had to Zoom in their position meetings. All those things. So I think that kind of happened. Also, like, let's not I don't want to pin everything on one guy, but there was a problem on the offensive line, right? And
did his name rhyme with Schmrown?
And so again, I'm not there. I wasn't there enough to say, like, hey, Trent Brown was a cancer that was spreading. But I would say if I'm a player on the offensive line and I'm looking around and, like, that dude's making all this money and, like, what is he doing to get on the field every week? I don't know. And I don't know. And it could work the other way too. It might not even just be him. It could be the other way, because clearly there was a problem between Trent Brown and in the organization, right? And if Trent Brown had the respect of that locker room, which I don't know that he did or not, because, again, I wasn't there. But if Trent Brown did have the respect in that locker room and they didn't like how he was being treated, that also can cause a rift between the organization and the players and some of the other players. And, I mean, those things can happen. So it's not always one way. So to say maybe you could put this on Trent Brown, it could be how the team is treating Trent Brown, how the organization's treating him. If the players didn't like that and they were taking Trent Brown's side, that can create a rift too. I mean, it can work both ways for sure. But clearly there was something there. But I don't necessarily think Rodney Hudson, like, fell out of favor with his teammates or was a problem among his teammates. I just think he was maybe a little bit unhappy with the direction it was going. I mean, he's running out of prime years. He's running out of elite years. And it, you know, the team has done what the last couple of years? I mean, nothing. There's nothing that signifies to you necessarily, like, sorry to say it, like, what exactly have they done in the offseason to make you think anything's going to be different next year?
Nothing in the secondary.
So much of the media, and this is like from national writers and even like just regular Raiders beat writers are so down on this move on the offensive line, where I'm like, we're saving like $33 million in the cap on that line, right? Like our interior line, guard, center, guard, their combined salary is less than what Gabe Jackson would have made this year. Yeah. So it's like, and are they that much more terrible? Like, we still have Colton Miller, Richie Incognito's back. Denzel Good played 14 games last year. He's still there. Tom Cable says Andre James is going to be a great center. Like, he's the one coach on the Raiders.
Yeah, I trust him.
Staff that I trust is Tom Cable. Like, you spend the first round pick on a right tackle. This line is about as good as our, you know, rinky dink, injury filled holes everywhere line last year, but cost less than half as much. Like, everyone is so down on these moves. Like, oh, the sky's falling. They're imploding the whole line. Like, Lord knows there's plenty of things to criticize John Gruden and Mike Mayock about this roster. These line moves, I love. It hurts losing Rodney, but yeah. I understand the move.
Oh, but and it's something, again, they had to do. I mean, again, investing that much money got you what? Like, you have to look at, like, what is the return? Yeah, a pretty good offensive line, but again, a line that missed a lot of games last year, wasn't even on the field. As you mentioned, you got rid of a bunch of guys that didn't even play. You know, Trent Brown was barely playing. Richie Incognito comes back, but he didn't play pretty much all of last year. I don't know. I don't, like – that's one where I say, okay, if Richie Incognito is what he was 2 years ago, the line could be pretty good. That's a big if, man.
Yeah.
The guy, he's an old man coming off a really serious injury.
Yeah.
I don't like, yes, if you told me right now Richie Incognito is going to get plugged into to the left guard and he's going to be what he was 2 years ago or even 3 years ago, okay. Like now you are building a pretty solid foundation for a line there, but yeah. I just think that's a big if that you have to kind of count on. And then a couple other spots that are ifs. I mean, you know, I like McMartin as a potential, you know, as a pass blocker. He's pretty good. He's a depth guy. They can play a little bit when they need to plug him in. We'll see how it is. But I think you're right. Like, I think there's reason to be optimistic, much more so than a lot of people are. A lot of people are just looking at it like, you lost everybody. You didn't. Like, you still got a lot of guys that played, a lot of guys with experience. You've got guys that are in place that could be good. You just have to see it on the field and see how it plays in. But I don't think it should be gloom and doom about what they did on the offensive line. The problem is you did what you're supposed to do, got younger, saved a lot of money, put yourself in position to really invest elsewhere to make the team better, and did what?
Well, Yannick Ngakoue, I think, was a no-brainer. That was great, right?
Great.
Exactly what we need. Like, literally, like a speedy edge rusher that can get to the quarterback. I mean, that's exactly what we need.
I'm probably being somewhat hypocritical on this because last year I was like banging the drum for them to trade for him early in the season when he was available and you could have got him. Last year was disappointing. A lot of the film from last year is not good. Now I will qualify with this. He played on three different teams. I mean, he was in the offseason with Jacksonville, then he was with Minnesota, then he was in Baltimore. It's tough to kind of find your place, tough to kind of settle in. But he definitely looked like much more of a specialist last year than he did like he's never going to be necessarily that three down defensive end, stop the run, get to the passer on passing. Sure. He's never going to be that guy necessarily. But even last year, like his pass rush win rate was not that great. He can get to the quarterback. He can, and we've seen him do it before. But he also, you know, he's kind of a one move guy. He kind of has thrived when he's had really, really good secondaries and had a little bit of time because they, you know, when he had AJ Bouye and Ramsey in Jacksonville, he was amazing because they held their guy for a couple seconds and he was able to get to the quarterback. So, you know, there's some hesitation I see in what he brings, but you're right. Like, that's a position they need to get to the quarterback, especially in the Gus Bradley defense. They have to get a guy that can get to the quarterback. And that's why I think you get him, you invest in bodies along the defensive front that I think some of them can emerge. And you know, I think what you're doing is kind of throwing a bunch of money at a bunch of guys and hoping a couple of them step up. But that's where you had to build. You had to build the defensive line because it wasn't good enough. And in Gus Bradley's system, you have to get to the quarterback. You have to, both from the inside and the outside. So if you're moving Clea Ferrell inside a little bit this year, letting him get to the quarterback there, Ngakoue on the outside, Max Crosby on the outside, which if they're on the field together, good luck against the run if they're on the field together. But you know, I think you've got some pieces in place to really start to build what Gus Bradley wants to do and start to get better defensively.
Do you think there is, with this whole O-line imploding, and at least on paper, the idea is there's going to be some more investment into the defense. Does this tell you anything about, not that John Gruden is like giving up his power or anything like that, but is he like maybe open to the fact that, hey, maybe let me let Mayock make some decisions. Maybe let Gus Bradley make some decisions. Because this feels very un-John Gruden-like, which tells me maybe he's like, all right, in 3 years, I haven't gotten a winning season yet. I'm still the man making $10 million a year, but maybe let me open up to some of my other, you know, my staff's ideas.
I mean, I think it tells me that he's just not insane.
That's a step in the right direction.
Look, I'll take it.
Yeah, isn't the definition of insanity doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result? And I think if you could say, like, okay, dude, you've done what you want to do offensively. You invested so much money in the offense. You got a line. You got, you know, you've worked with the quarterback for a few years, got him to where you want him to be. You've put some weapons around him. You got a running back in the first round. You got, you know, lucked into Darren Waller. I mean, listen, they had to scout him and figure out what he could do, but kind of lucked into Darren Waller being as successful as he is. You've built a great offense, and you keep getting burned defensively. And if he would have gone into this year and said, like, let's just run it back one more time and see what happens, like, that's just insane. So yeah. Give him credit. Like, you know, he clearly went against what he wants to do, which I think would have been all right, we scored 31 a game last year, whatever. Let's try to score 36 and see if we can really outscore somebody. That's probably what he wants to do. But, like, I think he realized, you know, in firing his good friend Paul Gunther and realizing, hey, look, we've got to do something on the defensive side of the ball, and it can't just be a coaching change. A coach can't make a miracle out of, you know, players that aren't ready to do it at this level. Like, you've got to invest in the defensive side. So, yeah, I mean, I think you give him some credit for going against kind of type. But if he would have not done that, it would have been just insane.
What do you think was the dynamic, or what do you think is the dynamic in the room right now? Gus Bradley, former head coach, the guy he wants to bring in, a guy that you can do what Gruden likes to do with his coaching staff. He doesn't want any part of the defense. Just go ahead and handle it. You're basically a 1A head coach just for the defensive side. So just go ahead. I'm not going to bother you. Do your thing. Gus Bradley is the kind of guy you can do that with. And he pounds the table. And they went after, and they got the position and the guy they wanted right away. You know Gus Bradley was pounding the table for that guy. What do you think that dynamic is? Is it shifting? Is it just Gruden kind of like, okay, we'll see if this works? Or is he actually, you think he's actually buying in?
I don't know. I mean, it's a great question. I think we'll find out. And it's funny. I think we never really know. I was having this conversation just to go inside, not just about the Raiders, about anybody. We were discussing, you know, probably shouldn't put this out, but I'll say it anyway. We're discussing just projects for our draft coverage, right? We're putting together a special section, you know, like 50 pages and just all kinds of tidbits on the draft. And one of my editors was saying, how about if we do like an examination of every team, what the power structure is in terms of, does the GM have final say? Does the head coach have final say? Who has final say? And what, you know, how they've fared the last, you know, say 10 years. Like, is it better to have the GM? Is it better to have the head coach? Is that better? And the answer from a couple of us that were going to work on it were like, wait a minute. How do we know for sure, though? Like, we
don't.
You think you know in every franchise, right? You're like, well, in this franchise, the head coach has more say. Here, the, you know, Jacksonville, Urban Meyer has final say. That was kind of part of his deal of going there, I guess. But you don't really know. You don't really know with any team. And I think with the Raiders, we think John Gruden has final say on almost every decision that's made. And he probably does, especially based on his contract. But that's not what he'll tell you. Like, he'll tell you, he's like, hey, listen, Mike's the general manager and he'll make the decision. Like, I think we kind of know that John Gruden is the one making the final decisions. It's pretty clear based on a lot of decisions that were made that that's happening. But you don't know everywhere who has the final say and who's banging the drum for who. And there's a reason for that. One being nobody wants the blame. You know, when something doesn't work out, nobody wants to be the one that's like, I have final say. I make the decisions. And then you make like four bad draft picks. Like, you're the one that makes the decisions. Everybody wants it to be a conglomeration of kind of everyone who's making those decisions. So I think it's tough to really get a read on it. I mean, I think it's obvious, like we're talking about, that John Gruden has been the guy making all the decisions no matter what, and he's had the final say on everything. And now this year, maybe he's allowing, you know, it makes sense that Gus Bradley is the one who drafted Yannick Ngakoue when he's the head coach in Jacksonville to then bring him in as, you know, his first big acquisition on defense here. It would make sense. It's logical to say that's a Gus Bradley move. But in the end, I don't think you know necessarily. And the Raiders did go after Ngakoue last year when, you know, they tried. They sent out feelers. They tried to, you know, see what it would cost to get him. And that's before Gus Bradley was here. So I don't think you ever know for sure who's making every decision.
So with free agency kind of in full swing, we talked about the offensive line. But outside of the offensive line, all those moves, is there anything that any recent moves that made you really raise your eyebrow, good or bad, Raiders-wise?
Well, I mean, obviously, first of all, I'm going to say that John Brown is a really good move.
Yes.
He's better than Nelson Aguilar.
I think they're comparable. He's had injury problems, so you don't know he's going to be on the field all the time. But they're comparable. I would lean that John Brown has been a little bit better too when he's on the field, but he also saved you money, right? It's a cheaper option, who's maybe a better player, who definitely fits what you want. Like, you want speed, he's got speed for sure. And so I think that's a really good move in terms of you save money from Aguilar, you get a comparable player, if not better, and you plug him right into the offense. And I think he has that same role that Aguilar had. So really good move there, I think. The Kenyon Drake one is very fascinating to me. I'll start with this. I've got a reputation for being like the Kenyon Drake super fan the last couple of years. Okay. Mostly because I'm an obsessed fantasy football player. And when he was in Miami, It was like I was just obsessed with how good he could be if he ever got out of Miami. It was like a running thing with people I'm in fantasy leagues with, like free Kenyon Drake from this awfulness of the Dolphins and let him shine. And then he did. And he had that one run at the end of 2 years ago with Arizona, where it was like 6 touchdowns in 3 weeks. And it was like, you know, I was getting all the, you know, I was soaking in all the accolades of like, wow, I'm brilliant. I'm a genius. This is great. And I thought last year, you know, obviously he had some injury problems. He wasn't as productive. Also last year, a really weird development in that his receiving really went downhill last year. He was a guy that could really catch the ball, was a weapon out of the backfield as a receiver in Miami when they were able to use him. And in the first couple of games with Arizona, he was too. And then last year, he just wasn't the same kind of factor in the receiving game. And in fact, even on third downs, they were putting him out of the game, putting Chase Edmonds in because he was a better receiver out of the backfield. So I'm interested to see where his receiving level is. But you know, all that being said, like bringing him in, everybody keeps calling backup running back, and I had referred to him as that earlier. That's not really what his job is going to be. It's going to be what they wanted Lynn Bowden to be last year. Yeah. That, you know, everybody's calling the Joker, whatever it is. It's going to be just a weapon, more of a receiving type player if he can continue to, if he gets better, if he bounces back in that regard. And really just like I've watched for him a lot of third downs, you know, take the pressure off Renfrow, and maybe it's going to Kenyon Drake. Maybe you can use him in a lot of different ways. I think just get the ball in his hands and see what you can do with it. That's what they want to do with him. But that's a lot of money to pay him to do that job.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see. Like, I know, like, you know, I don't know how much you guys follow the Pro Football Focus guys. That's you know, I'm pretty obsessed with a lot of stuff they do and a lot of stuff they talk about. A couple of them are convinced that the Raiders are trying to put together a package still to acquire a quarterback, and that Josh Jacobs is now on the block because they got Kenyon Drake to come in and take his place, which I don't buy into that at all. I think they're set there, but that at least would make sense of why you spend a bunch of money on a Kenyon Drake who doesn't make a whole lot of sense right now in terms of what you need for your team. I mean, we talk about, okay, was Kenyon Drake going to be potential receiving threat, potentially a third down guy? We've got Renfrow for that. You've got Waller as the receiving. I mean, you've got enough receiving threats on the field that you don't have to overpay for a quote unquote backup running back, third down running back, you know, specialist out of the backfield type guy. I don't know. Like that at least made some sense to me, but I don't think that was the plan. I think they just really wanted Kenyon Drake.
Yeah. What do you think about like?
I think it's like look, like the first stats of it, right? You see the contract and you see the player. You're like backup running back label for that number, right? And you're just like, what? But as you dig a little bit, you think, all right, Jacobs, you know, he gets hurt every season, right? So it'd be nice to have a good backup running back. They keep trying to say, like, Jacobs said he was going to get 60 receptions out of the backfield last season. Didn't even get half that. He got a little bit more. Like, he improved in that realm, but not even half that. I mean, you know, the idea that, like, now you've got a real receiving threat out of the backfield, the guy that can motion out into, like, like outside and just, like, destroy some linebacker in man-to-man, plus Jacobs gets hurt, you're like, okay – I think this is kind of making sense. And, you know, when with this this last draft class of receivers, there's like 6, 7, 8 receivers that can go in the first round. There are all these free agent wide receivers available. I was thinking, maybe we'll get like a Galladay or like some crazy good receiver only because it's just a buyer's market just because there's so many of them. Now that you add Kenyon Drake, you're like, all right, if Brown is even remotely close to what he was in Buffalo, we're great. If our second year receivers get over their rookie kind of mistakes, they'll be great. Renfrow can always depend on. Obviously, Darren Waller's top three tight end. We've got some of the most like diverse and dangerous receiving threats through all of our skill positions on offense. That rivals basically any team, I would say.
Yeah, like I said, I'm concerned about where Kenyon Drake was in the receiving game last year. Yeah. He was not the same player he's been in the past. So. Maybe the Raiders saw something and they feel like the Cardinals weren't using him correctly, that he can have a bounce back type season. Like I said, I'm as big a Kenyon Drake guy as there is. I think he can be dynamic in the passing game. He just wasn't last year. He was dropping passes. He wasn't getting open. There was a lot of problems with him in the receiving game last year. So I don't know if they just believe that was an anomaly, because that was like his most extensive action. So it's not like, you know, it's not like he was being hidden or anything like that. It's not like he just wasn't used. He was out there on the field all the time. Maybe they think that being used as a first and second down back kind of set him back on third down, kind of didn't allow him to be a third down threat. I don't know. But if that is the plan, and it seems like it is, that that's going to be his role, that's banking on a lot of, you know, a lot of bounce back from Kenyon Drake, and maybe they just think they can find a better role for him than the Cardinals have.
What about like a potential backfield like the Saints had, an Ingram Kamara type thing, where you have the bruiser runner and you have the guy that kind of does the screen game, catches the balls a little bit more. I mean, not quite as explosive as we've seen as Kamara be, but something esque.
Yeah. I mean, like, listen, if you're going to model yourself after an offense, that's probably one to pick.
One to do, yeah.
It's nice to have, you know, a Kamara, like, and you know, Kenyon Drake, it can, you know, he's shown to be that player. He can run between the tackles. He can get outside. He's got the speed. He can also be a receiver. That's a Kamara-like player, but he's not Alvin Kamara. He's a different type of player for sure. But yeah, I mean, that's something that you could look at to utilize your weapons in that regard. Sure. I mean, that's a possibility for what.
I think we lost you there for a second, Adam.
Yeah. Lost the audio.
Lost your audio there, Adam.
Right when it was getting hot, too.
I know, right? Things are getting juicy.
He was waxing poetic.
There you are.
You go, you back?
Oh, he's back.
Okay. There we go. Sorry about that. You were waxing poetic, man. You were on it.
It was. Sorry, what I was going to say, and I don't know when I froze, but what Kenyon Drake is to me is a luxury. And I just don't know that they had that luxury right then. When they made that signing, were they in a spot where they have a, you know, hey, we're so good everywhere else. We got this luxury that we're going to bring in right now. You know, we've got a chance to an open roster spot and some open money to bring in this guy. Like, I feel like there's other spots they need to fill before they can take a chance on a luxury guy.
I felt like I got kicked in the dick when Anthony Harris signed for $5 million for 1 year. I got gut punched. And I was like, what the fuck? It's like the chick that was way too hot and I didn't want to ask her out. Ends up going out with RJ, he's the freaking ugly friend of mine. It's like, what the hell, man? I should have just asked her out.
That's quite a
comparison. Is he painting a picture for you, Adam? Do you understand where his question's going?
No. You're going to have to be a little bit more clear on that one. That's weird. Well, here's the other thing. I mean, I think there's a lot of guys, though. I still think there's guys on the market that are out there. I still think there's going to be guys that sign where you're like, wait, what? Sign for that? And there's no more superstars really out on the market, anything like that. But I think you're going to be looking in like a month and still see some guys that are waiting for deals. And you're like, wait, you could have just waited and got that guy for $3 million. Could have got that guy for $2 million because there's no market and there's this weird salary cap year where guys are just going to take 1 year deals. I do think that there's going to be things like that. I thought, and again, this is a different scenario. I'm going back on it, but like, I thought Marcus Williams was going to be a guy who was going to be available and could probably be like a perfect fit. And then, you know, that he gets tagged, which I still don't understand how the Saints have any kind of money to be spending on guys like that. But I do think there's still going to be, and listen, we talk about, well, the Raiders still have holes to fill. Sure, they do. But again, there is going to be this market of guys that are potential starting players in the NFL that just don't have contracts in a month or two that you're still going to be able to kind of clean up. So I think, you know, waiting back and still having a little bit of cap space and a little bit of room to maneuver, especially now, spending a little bit of money on Mariota, like having a little bit of money right now is probably good, and not just rushing sign somebody because I do think there's going to be an opportunity to pounce on two or three guys here and there. I thought that was going to be the Raiders' plan from the beginning of just kind of sitting back and plucking guys that just weren't, you know, weren't happy with what the market was, didn't think that they were getting what they deserved, and just, you know, stood back out and didn't sign, and then all of a sudden had to settle for deals at the end of the free agency. I thought that was going to be the plan, and it still might be. They still have opportunity to do that with a couple of guys. There's going to be guys available that, you know, they're like, well, this year sucks because of where the cap is, and I can't get what I want to get, and I don't get the market value. But yeah, to go back to your question, that had to be disappointing for a lot of teams to just think like, wait, why wasn't that our focus? Why don't we wait and get a guy like that for, you know, $5 million steal?
Well, AJ Bouye is out there still, I think, corner. What do you think safety-wise if you had to pick from whatever's left out there? Because that's a big need for the Raiders right now.
It is. I'm interested to find out if they plan on waiting for the draft. There is a couple guys that are second to third round, you know, possible projections, but like, Morig is definitely a day one starter in the NFL. I think he's the only one that's really in the draft right now. He's projected right there. Did I freeze on you guys again? Sorry.
We hear you, but you're frozen now.
What a disaster.
Before you were moving, we couldn't hear you. Now you're there. You are.
There you go. You're back.
Might as well just shut the camera off anyway. Just talk. That's better. Yeah. So, but I mean, it's possible that that's the plan. I know a lot of people are kind of looking at, you know, wanting them to go right tackle in the draft now. I know they were down at Elijah Vera Tucker's pro day today, kind of checking him out from USC. He could play guard or tackle.
I think he's a stud, man. If he's available, that's your right tackle for a long time.
Yeah, I would think so. But I mean, I don't know what their plan is. That's where I would probably be looking in the draft too. But maybe that's the approach of taking safety in the draft, which, you know, I don't know that a rookie is necessarily what you want in this defense. I don't think it's the right fit. I think you want more of a veteran guy to go with the very, very young secondary that you have. But I also, like, I do feel like a couple of those guys, you know, Marcus May going back, you know, as I said, with Williams going back and getting tagged, like, I think that they thought the safety market was going to be a lot deeper in free agency. A lot of people, I mean, when you looked at the projections for who was going to be free agents, there was like 5-6 like star safeties that you're like, all right, you can have your pick of these guys. And then like four of them signed, had.
All right.
Franchise tagged. I finished a sentence for him.
There we go.
I can read his mind. So now he's frozen and we can't hear him.
It's making a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would make sense if it would make sense if you went to for safety in the draft, because you do have, you know,
it wouldn't make sense. We need a veteran safety.
You have more depth in the offensive line than you do in the secondary. So if that's the plan, I mean, I can defend the plan. I'm not saying I agree with it, but you can, you know, it's defensible.
I mean, the bottom line is you're going to need both in the draft. And that sounds, you know, that's an easy cop out, but you do have glaring need, like where you are right now as a team, as a roster, there are glaring needs that you have a couple more, maybe, you know, one or two more, not blockbuster signings, but, you know, signings that you can make. And then you have the draft to address them. And then, you know, potentially if there's, you know, trades to be made or guys that are, you know, veterans that are cut. There's still going to be veteran cuts that are made from other teams too. And that's another thing to look for, is that, you know, a lot of teams you're looking around and saying like, well, this is not going to be your roster. You're going to have to get rid of some guys. You know, they're right up against the cap or even above it, and they still have draft picks to sign and they still have holes to fill on their team. So I think there's going to be another round of pretty big cuts coming, and guys that are legitimate, you know, starting players in the NFL. And that doesn't always excite people. It doesn't always get people like, oh, look who we got. But you get a starting player, especially late in the process, you're pretty happy as a team. And I think there's going to be starters out there that you can still sign. The guys that will start for you day one next season that are still going to be out there, and you might not even know who they are yet because you're going to be surprised at their cut. But I still see another, you know, pretty big round of cuts coming.
Did the Raiders play this Marcus Mariota thing like perfectly? Made him wait till everyone got their quarterbacks, and then finally say, okay, you have no more places to go. Take a pay cut, $3.5 million, and we lost.
And he's gone.
And that's gone. Well, I think that's his way of saying, guys, I'm over you. I'm done, which I understand.
You know what? I've been broken up like that before. I've been ghosted
on Zoom. You get broken up on Zoom.
Look, she was from a different country, and she swore that her mom was sick, and I sent her some money, and then it just so happened that there was some kind of issue that happened with her visa, and she couldn't make it. All right,
she was a prince in Cairo, where if you just send him $3,000, I'll send you $20 million.
She was on page 4, so she was still pretty high up.
Yeah,
and that's the one I chose. So, you know, whatever happens.
Okay. All right, Adam's back. Mariota,
I feel like I missed something very exciting there. There was a real heated debate going on. I think what you want is a quality veteran backup quarterback at a low rate. I mean, that's what you want, and that's what you ended up getting. I think it's good that they have him. I think, you know, having him a second year too in the offense, if he is pressed into action, we saw what he could do last year, but that was in a very small sample size. I think, you know, you're comfortable. listen, you're comfortable with Derek Carr, and I know that there was a lot of speculation of what could happen. Could they go get somebody else? Could they package and get Deshaun Watson? By the way, the Deshaun Watson thing is very intriguing now because I would still trade for him.
Yeah.
I just wonder what the price would be. Like,
isn't that the most Raiders thing ever where it's like, Deshaun Watson, no, we don't want you. Oh, 18 charges of sexual assault? Okay, now we'll take you. That's the
She was shoving his dick in everybody's face. Like, what the fuck?
Hold on.
He's not charged. Yes.
And he's not charged. And even read the suits. Now, I'm not defending Deshaun Watson because that's how it's going to come across right now. But, like, the allegations aren't even that he forced himself. Was that whatever I say, it's going to come across that I'm defending.
Just say it, man.
We're still going to cut this interview and use it out of context. Anyway.
It's fine. I would tell people to read the actual allegations and not the headlines that are accompanying the allegations. If you're going to cut something, please cut that. Not the because I don't like. Listen, I think if any of these accusations are true, like, it's awful and terrible. But I also am very, very intrigued by the actual wording of some of the allegations that are very interesting.
Like, was he just asking for the dome, not forcing?
And now we don't hear you again, Adam. Yeah, your mic's off again.
Was he just asking
for pushing buttons? Head?
I don't know.
We don't even have to cut him out of context. He's doing it himself.
Perfect. Yeah, he's bleeping himself.
Yeah, I am.
It's there he is. He's back.
This is a nightmare. I'm sorry, guys. But like, okay, a couple weeks ago, people were like speculating what would the cost be, and it was like, I don't know, 3 ones, Carr, Jacobs, maybe a third and a fifth. Also, like, it was all this craziness. Now, if you called and said a first and Carr,
deal.
I mean, circumstances do change. And like, I think it's, you know, it becomes more interesting now to see where the market is. But again, I'm just speaking from a pure football perspective on this to where it could be. But no, in terms of Mariota, yeah, like if you are, you know, and I do think Carr is they're perfectly content with him as the starting quarterback. I think they're excited about him as the starting quarterback, mm-hmm. as they should be. And if you're going to have Carr and he's going to be the guy and you're going to have Mariota as a backup, like that's about as good a situation as you can have. In the NFL, like other teams are looking at that saying, hey, that's something we would definitely take going into the season. So I think, you know, you're set there and to have a quarterback room where you have a competent backup, more than a competent backup, somebody that's won games in the NFL, somebody who showed he can still play last year, somebody who's a second year in the system, and to have him on that price tag, you're one of the few teams in the league that can just sit back and be like, all right, we're set at quarterback, starter, backup, the whole room, we're good. We only have to worry about the other positions. That's a good position to be in for any team.
That's two more quarterbacks than they have in Denver. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, your laptop is telling us that you're done
because it keeps trying
to pull you away from us. We appreciate you coming on.
More tired than I am.
Before we let you out of here, big heavyweight title fight in the UFC this weekend, real quick. Yeah. Stipe is an underdog again. Tiny underdog, right? Like, it might be like he might be a favorite by fight night, but like, you guys got more UFC heavyweight title defenses than anybody. This can't be a favorite.
The greatest of all time, an underdog in the fight.
Every single time.
Every time. It's crazy. And I don't know if you know this. He's actually a fireman, and he still works his job. Not a lot of people talk about that.
I don't envy the MMA beat when it's quarantine time and you don't get your one-on-ones. I don't envy the stories you have to chase down,
Adam. It's true. It's true. But, you know, Francis is a Las Vegas guy now. He's been here for a while. You know, he's such a good dude and such a great story. But yeah. Stipe is just so underrated. I mean, it's hard to say a guy that's considered the best heavyweight of all time in MMA by a lot of people is underrated, but he is. It's crazy. So I'm excited for this fight. It sucks that the card kind of fell apart a little bit around it.
Yeah.
But there's still some intriguing fights in addition to the main event. I just hope we get the main event intact. Up until Saturday, because it's been kind of a mess the last 4 or 5 days here with some of these fights, and it'll be a big one this Saturday.
His name's Adam Hill. Follow him on Twitter at Adam Hill LVRJ. Of course, you can check him out on Las Vegas Review Journal, and one of the first reoccurring guests ever in the history of the Autumn Windbags. No matter what happens in your career, Adam, no one can ever take that away from you.
Yeah, and I'm going to restart the router and get new Wi-Fi for next time I come on.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam. Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Adam. We appreciate that.
That was the man.
He's the man. There's a – I try to make sure that my excitement level doesn't get overrun in the offseason, right?
Yep.
Because I was looking at our moves on defense. I'm like, all right, a bunch of defensive tackles. We re-signed the only one that mattered.
Yep, yep, yep.
Hopefully one of those cheap guys are going to come across and do well for us.
One or two, you know. We signed a bunch of them.
Should be all right, right? Like Clay Ferrell is, even though he's been very disappointing as a pass rusher.
At an end.
As a run stopper. Good.
Very good.
Much, very much above average. We have all three of our linebackers back. Hopefully a year, another a season away from Paul Gunther under Gus Bradley, things kind of clean up a little bit.
There you go.
I don't want to say any kind of crazy hyperbole or make some outrageous claims here, Soto, but our run defense might approach respectable.
I'll tell you what, it can only go up from here because I was flipping through Instagram and NFL's page, NFL, Networks page. I know just the NFL page on Instagram. They posted a video today, March 24th. Go check it out. Of the best running back plays from one running back from each team.
Yeah, they do that. And best play of each team. Yeah.
Yeah. And four of them were against the Raiders. And it was terrible. It was bad. And it was the Colts, it was the Patriots, and I stopped looking at it, you know, because
on those lists is like getting your name called as an offensive lineman. Like,
you don't want it.
You're best when you're on those lists. You're best if you're seen once, right?
When your running back's on there, and that's
your running back's doing his thing. Great. Other than that, what was the Raiders running the best run from the Raiders?
It was just a regular old run that Jacobs, the long run that Jacobs was like a 26-yard run. Yeah, a 28-yard run. That was it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't anything spectacular.
That's where Kenyon Drake, I think, could be a big difference maker. Like, love Josh Jacobs, right? Like, he makes guys miss, fights hard. Great. Wonderful. But, like, the explosive home run possibilities hasn't really shown it. Hopefully Drake.
I mean, I watched that three times because I'm convinced if that would have been a 30-yard run, Jacobs would have been tackled at the one.
Yeah.
He was getting – they were catching up to him. And, I mean, we made Burkhead look like he was a shifty back. Like, oh, God, it was awful. It was terrible.
Remember, like, at the beginning of the year, the people were, like, excited for the Patriots and Cam Newton? They're like, oh, wow, they're really on to something. No, they just played the Raiders. That's why they look great.
Yeah, their offense looked great because the Raiders couldn't stop anything.
Yeah. All right, before we get out of here, let's do some What Up Windbags.
This
one comes from King of Kings on YouTube. The thing I love about this is John Gruden has his vision. It's year four starting this offseason. We have been awful for 20-plus years. Rebuilds take time. Our record has improved every freaking year, man. This is the start of the hot seat. Year four and five will determine how this is going. What do you think, Soto?
If you want to look at it from with Raider glasses on, I can see it from a more impartial perspective. It seems like he's pivoting on his initial plan. Mm-hmm. And Adam talked about it, where he's banking and pushing on this offensive line that didn't get him the wins that he needs and didn't get him the roster that he needs overall. And that's the one thing he talked about. His first press conference was, our guard center guard combo, who none of them are here anymore, is the best in the league. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's a strong pivot when that's the thing that you bank your the success of your team on. None of them are here. That's not a vision, a single vision. Now, do I give John Gruden credit for pivoting when he needed to? Yes, I do. So there's some reason for optimism there. But as far as this being looked at as a continual single vision, that's just inaccurate.
I just love how he's like, yeah, like it takes time. Like, give them 4 to 5 years to rebuild their team. Like,
nobody gets 4 to 5 years.
What other coach gets half a decade to turn a franchise around? Like, remember how atrocious the Dolphins were two seasons ago? Where everyone's like, oh, they're going to go 0-16. They're going to be the worst team ever. They're 10-6 this season.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is what happened. Like,
and I'll tell you this, man. I'll tell you this. They had a couple of guys develop. A couple of guys that they had in the defensive side develop and take a big step this year. They also sign a lot of guys to those short little contracts to what we're doing right now as well on the defensive side. And those guys are plug and play guys who were just guys everywhere else, but they plugged, they got a little bit more time and they did really well. So there's cause for optimism, but you know, like you said, yeah, it has to jump quick. You don't have a lot of time in the NFL.
Michael NorCal Raider.
Again,
man, one of my favorite lines from you is Aguilar owes Carr a fruit basket or something. How many receivers owe Derek Carr? Probably more than we think. So we talked about this at the beginning of the show. Like, this offense is becoming a place where you go to rehab your image. Aguilar is now a multimillionaire. You know, our offensive line, like, being expensive, like, they got people gave up assets for those contracts. Like, yeah. They're getting, you know, Trent Brown had to restructure, but you know, Jackson, Hudson, like, not only are these other teams willing to pay that money, they're willing to give up draft picks to get them. Yeah. Darren Waller's now a household name. Back, well, he was a practice squad guy for the Ravens. Like, dude.
How many receivers
do you want to be if you're Derek on offense? Carr.
I mean, receivers owe him that have left, just one, who's Aguilar. But receivers that we're keeping, yeah, like you said, there's guys here that definitely owe their quarterback a lot of debt, a gratitude for that. He's accurate, man. He knows he can put the ball where he needs to put it. Let's see if you know, they drop a little bit more and he's able to push the ball a little bit further and not check down when it's third and eight and you throw a 3 yard out. Let's see if we can maybe push the ball a little bit further down the field this time.
Last one's from Marvin Sanders. Now, this is from 6 days ago. Just okay. So you know, this comment's from 6 days ago. 7 days ago if you're listening on Thursday.
Come on, people. Let's get some comments here. Come on.
We're going to need a backup center and running back, okay. Free safety, cornerback, and right tackle. That's exactly correct. We got the backup center from Houston.
Got him.
We got the backup running back, right? Kenyon Drake.
Yep.
Free safety, corner,
nope.
Right tackle. Nope. And again, if we can draft a first round right tackle, I'm happy. If we can get the best free agent, you know, free safety available. Hell, maybe even a trade. Like a trade, you know, it's not like it doesn't just have to be a free agent. Like, there can be a trade for a decent free safety. Yeah. Our, you know, all the holes in our roster are gone. The depth in it. Are certain guys going to play out? You know, the jury is still out, obviously, on half a dozen guys on that defense. But as far as, like, on paper, a starting caliber guy where we need him to be, that would be it. We'd all be filled.
Look, A.J. Bouye is out there. A.J. Bouye is out there. Mm-hmm. He was a Gus Bradley guy. He was the number two. When Jalen Ramsey was there, he was definitely the number two. But it wasn't like he was shit and Ramsey was, you know – They didn't want to throw AJ Bouye's way either. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if we got the space and we're looking to shore up a position, I like that. I like if Elijah Vera Tucker's available, he could play right tackle. He could be your right tackle for a lot of years to come. The free safety, I'm not very excited, or I don't think we should sign anyone who's available right now. Mm-hmm. We should see what happens in the second round of roster cuts towards, you know, when training camp starts and stuff like that, when people need to get under the cap. You know, there's a lot of teams out there who are over or, you know, want to have a little bit more flexibility. That's probably going to be what we need to do for free safety at the time. Cause there's nothing out there that excites me at all.
Well, we'll see if anything pops up between now and next week's episode. Cause that's it for us. We'll see you next time. But until then, knock on wood, if you're with me.
Thanks again for joining us on another edition of the Auto Windbags. We really appreciate it. Of course, make sure to go like, subscribe, comment, check us out on social media, subscribe to our YouTube page, and all the other wonderful things that make us so happy for you to be a part of us. All right, until next time. Later.